Let's get right to it with opening statements by Cointoss. Mr. Gillespie, you're first. 2 minutes.
Judy, thank you, and thank you to the members of the BVA for hosting us here today. Ralph, it's good to be with you again. I look forward to sharing my plans to get Virginia growing again, for a Virginia that works for all Virginians. We don't have that right now. For 6 straight years now, our economic growth rate has been below the national GDP rate. We used to always lead it, and now we are lagging it. Our growth last year was 0.6%, 39th out of 50 states. If you were to drive from Maine down the East Coast to Florida, every state you would pass through is doing better than we are economically today, with the single exception of Delaware, which has fewer people than Fairfax County. When it comes to economic growth and job creation, Virginia should be first in the nation, and we can be with the right policies. Those are my policies that will create jobs and raise take-home pay and help people lift themselves out of poverty and make sure that the next generation of Virginians can do better than the generation that came before. See, that's important to me because my father came to this country as a boy from Ireland because my grandfather found work in America as a janitor. My parents never went to college, but they insisted I do. And I worked my way through school in a lot of different jobs, and eventually I got to be counselor to the President of the United States of America. That kind of economic opportunity and upward mobility needs to be available for all Virginians. But sadly, during Lieutenant Governor Northam's time in office, Virginia hit the bottom 10 states in economic growth, and last year a 10-year low in labor force participation rate. That's not a Virginia that's working for all Virginians. My policies will make things better for us, for all Virginians. The policies the Lieutenant Governor adopted in the Democratic primary will make things worse, and I look forward to a civil debate today about the differences between us when it comes to the policies that are best for Virginia. Thank you.
Lieutenant Governor Northam.
Well, good morning, and thanks to the VBA, and thanks, Judy, so much for moderating this. What a privilege it is for both of us in the audience. I'd also like to welcome my wife, Pam, to the audience this morning on the front row. You know, it is time to ignite Virginia with innovation. It's time to...
I'm here from Loudoun County, Virginia, to say...
Could you please respect the rules of the debate, sir? Could you please respect the rules? We have... Sir, could you please respect the rules of the debate? Please.
And well-being of people throughout the state. They stand with Dominion's profits over clean water.
We are going to give the candidates. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you all for your patience. We have an hour and a half for this debate, and if there are any more who plan to try to do what this gentleman did, you're simply taking time away from the ability of the members of the VBA and the people of Virginia to hear what the issues are. I think we got his point. In any event, I can assure you we're going to try to touch on all the important issues today. Let's go back to opening statements,
well,
Mr.
Well, Ed and I have agreed that we're going to be flexible, Judy, so this is it's okay. But you know, as I was saying earlier, it's time to ignite Virginia with innovation. It's time to develop ecosystems where we can really build small businesses and especially startups. You know, I look forward this morning to telling you my vision and my experience on how tomorrow happens right here in Virginia. I grew up on a small farm on Virginia's Eastern Shore. I'm a product of public schools. I've worked very hard during my life, but I've had some great opportunities. I graduated from Virginia Military Institute and then Eastern Virginia Medical School. I had the opportunity to serve in the United States Army for 8 years, taking care of wounded soldiers during Desert Storm. Pam and I have lived in Norfolk, and I have taken care of sick children and their families for over 25 years. We have raised two wonderful children. Aubrey, our daughter, is a web developer in Richmond, and our son Wes is a neurosurgeon down in Chapel Hill. You know, I have been privileged to serve in the Virginia Senate for 6 years. I passed the smoking ban in restaurants. And then as the Lieutenant Governor, I have had a wonderful relationship with Governor McAuliffe, building the new Virginia economy, bringing in 195,000 jobs to the Commonwealth of Virginia, over $16 billion of capital investment, and our unemployment rate has gone from 5.4 to 3.7%. It is the lowest that it's been in over 8 years. Can we do better? Absolutely. And I have a plan to build rural Virginia. You know, as a doctor, I'm a listener, and I hear people around the Commonwealth saying, I want a job that I can support myself and myself and my family with. I want to make sure that my children have access to world-class education and my family's access to affordable and health, affordable and quality health care. I look forward this morning to sharing my vision with you on how we take Virginia to the next level. Thank you so much.
Thank you both for your opening statements. And you both raise issues that we are going to get to in this debate. This race is about Virginia, but it doesn't occur in a vacuum. The eyes of the country are on the Commonwealth this year, watching to see how much of a factor is President Trump, who happens to be in the state today, in Norfolk. He often spends weekend days at his golf club in Northern Virginia. So I want to address him first. Lieutenant Governor Northam, just last month, you called the president, quote, a narcissistic maniac. My question is, given that, do you believe he's fit for office? And do you believe the Congress should consider impeachment?
Well, thank you, Judy, and I stand by what I said. I believe that our president is a dangerous man. I believe that he lacks empathy. You need to look no further than his mocking of the journalists. That's all that I needed to see. And he also has difficulty telling the truth. And it happens again and again. As we say on the Eastern Shore, he lies like a rug. So yes, we do need to stand up to what's going on in Washington. His Trump care that would take 22 million people around the United States, especially those with pre-existing conditions. It would threaten their health coverage. His policy on pulling away from the Paris Accord. We have made so much progress in green energy, in renewable energy. His attacks on people like the LGBT community, on women's access to reproductive health care. All of these things are issues that we feel very strongly about as we watch what's going on in Washington. And my opponent has really stood there and said nothing about things like the Trump care that, again, would threaten so many Virginians from their care. And would also, it's just really a tax break for the rich on the shoulders of the working class. That's unacceptable. And finally, his travel ban. I have a lot of Muslim friends around the Commonwealth. They're living in fear. That's not the Virginia that I know. Virginia is diverse and it's inclusive, and that's the way it will continue to be when I'm governor of the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Mr. Gillespie, response?
President's in Norfolk today for the commissioning of the Gerald R. Ford, a aircraft carrier that was built here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and building more ships and submarines in Newport News, dredging the channel in the port so that we can accept these Panamax container ships and continue to be the deepest port on the East Coast. We should be the busiest port on the East Coast to ensure that Norfolk remains the largest naval base in the world, to get more of our hard-earned dollars that we send to Washington for transportation spent in the Commonwealth of Virginia is important to us here. 20 cents of every dollar in our state GDP is a direct federal dollar. And I want to increase our private sector and grow it because it's been stagnant, like I say, for 6 years, and diminish the percentage of our economy that is reliant on direct federal spending. But for now, it is, and we need to have a governor who can work with the president, the vice president, the administration, Republicans in the House and the Senate, to make sure that we are protecting Norfolk, that we are getting our channel dredged, that we are getting more transportation dollars in Virginia. And I just, when you hear the lieutenant governor, he calls his campaign the Resistance, Resistance 2017. You know, what are you going to do as our governor? Call the White House and say, please put me through to the narcissistic maniac. We've got to get more of our ships and submarines built here in Virginia. I will work on behalf of the people of Virginia to make sure that we are creating jobs, raising take-home pay, and helping people lift themselves out of poverty.
Mr. Northam, rebuttal.
Well, thank you. And Ed, I would just say if the shoe fits, wear it. And I would encourage everybody to look up the diagnostic criteria for narcissism, and they'll see that it does come quite close to an accurate diagnosis. Newport News, which is where we build our submarines and warships, is our background, our backyard, really. And I have a great relationship with those folks. And so as a veteran of the United States Army, I believe in carrying a big stick. So if President Trump will stick to his word and build up our military, that will be great for the Commonwealth of Virginia. If he will end sequestration, something that really was a deterrent, a detriment to our building our new Virginia economy, I'm all with him. But I will also stand up against the detrimental policies that he has. And Judy, in your question, you ask about impeachment. You know, we are blessed in Virginia to have two great U.S. senators, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, and we have great congressmen. I have full faith in them. And if the impeachment process comes up, I think that they'll be able to handle that situation.
Mr. Gillespie, to you on President Trump, it is the case that you have spoken little about him during this campaign. You did say this week that you thought you should work with him. You've said so just now. But we also know that this is a president who fired the FBI director for digging, he said, too deeply into the Russia matter. He attacked his own attorney general, not over policy, but over recusing himself from the Russia probe. And then there are the veiled threats against the special counsel, Robert Mueller. And now there are reports the president is looking at pardoning himself or members of his family. You have not spoken about this. Now is your chance.
Well, look, like I said, when the president is doing things good for Virginia, I'm going to work to make sure that we get those things done. I don't agree with everything the president says or tweets, and I've made that clear, but my focus is on Virginia. And we have got to get Virginia growing again. When I disagree with the president, I will make it clear. I do not believe that we should zero out funding for the Chesapeake Bay Cleanup Fund or the Appalachian Regional Commission. And I'll work with our congressional delegation to get that funding restored if I'm the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. But I will absolutely work with an administration and with a president and a vice president and the cabinet that has a significant impact on our economy in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Let me say it again, 20 cents of every dollar is a direct federal dollar in our economy from the federal government. In Hampton Roads, it's a lot more than that, Ralph, as we both know. And so, but the other thing I would say, Judy, is, you know, we can't just count on Washington, D.C. to solve our problems for us. I have policies to get Virginia growing again to address the challenges we face, a 10% across-the-board cut in our individual income tax rates. That would create more than 53,000 full-time private sector, good-paying jobs in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's a 25% increase over what we project right now. We need those jobs. We need those opportunities. We need to, in Virginia, enact policies to change the stagnation that we have suffered under during the Lieutenant Governor's time in office.
Will you support him if he were to fire Robert Mueller?
Judy, I don't, you know, I understand and I appreciate and I respect and I've seen your show and I know that it's very focused on what's going on in Washington, D.C. But the fact is, I am very focused on what's going on in Virginia, and I think the people who are here, Virginians, right, want to know what are we doing in our state government to make things better for all Virginians.
And we're going to
get to
that.
How are we going to address the college affordability? And that's my that's what I'm here to talk about today.
Okay.
You know, Judy, we just heard that he supports our military, and I commend you for that, and I support the military as well. But what about health care? You know, for over 500,000 Virginians that are at risk of losing their coverage. What about, you say you want to take care of all Virginians, what about the diverse society that we live in? What about the Muslim community, his travel ban that came out against them, scholars and professors that are fearful of leaving this state that they won't come back, children that are fearful of going to school every day that when they come back, their parents will no longer be there. So if, Judy, if we're going to take care of all Virginians, we can't just pick and choose. We can't just say, well, I'm in favor of military spending and building up Newport News. I think that's great. But we've got a lot of other issues right here in the Commonwealth of Virginia that we need to address. And you've really been missing in action on all of these issues, as our moderator just said. So we need Virginia. Yes, this is important.
Did you
for
just
Virginia
say that?
And Virginians need to know
I missed
we're
it.
Stand up for Virginians. What did you miss?
I missed Judy saying that, but you apparently heard it.
Rebuttal
I'm not sure anyone else
now.
Did.
Rebuttal now from Mr. Gillespie.
Look, let me just say this too, in terms of the pause on refugee resettlement when that came out. I said that we needed to accommodate the green card holders. And then later, the White House did that, and I thought that was a good thing. Healthcare, Ralph Northam supports the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, 100%, says it's been good for the Commonwealth of Virginia. I was talking to a woman just a couple weeks ago, Richmond. She provides the healthcare for her family, for her two young children, and for her husband. Under the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, her premiums tripled from $400 a month to $1,200 a month. She could not afford to pay that. By the way, that was for a $10,000 deductible. It's hardly any insurance at all. And so I know that we can, in Virginia, and Ralph's answer to everything, you'll hear it again today, is, you know, have the federal government do something, have Washington, D.C. do something. I'm putting forward plans that will increase competition in the insurer market and the provider market. That will bring down costs for Virginians and make health care more affordable, more accessible to all Virginians.
All right, we are coming now to, I'm going to ask a question about that, which will give you an opportunity to respond to Mr. Gillespie. Health care, and again, we got many questions from VBA members about this. As we've seen with the Affordable Care Act, federal policies do have a profound effect on Virginia. You've criticized Republican efforts to undo the Affordable Care Act, but in Virginia, Medicaid spending has gone up more than 80% over the last 10 years. It's now $8.6 billion. And under the ACA, premiums are expected to rise an average of 20% next year after a 16% rise already this year. Some insurers have pulled out of the exchanges. Aren't the critics right, Mr. Northam, that either on the exchanges or on Medicaid, the system is not sustainable?
Well, first of all, Judy, and thank you for that question, and I do have a little bit of understanding of health care, and my opponent, Mr. Gillespie, just said that I'm 100% behind the Affordable Care Act, and I'm not sure which Wikipedia link you looked at, but I'm not 100% behind the Affordable Care Act. Are there some good things about the Affordable Care Act? Absolutely, and as a doctor, I will tell you, no more do we have to worry about pre-existing conditions. We can keep our children on our policy until they're 26 years old. Pam and I did that with both of our children. The emphasis on access to preventive care, the emphasis on access to mental health care, and by the way, we have a tremendous opioid crisis right here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the emphasis on access to women's reproductive care. These are all good things about the Affordable Care Act. Are there things that we can improve upon? Absolutely. And what I have called for is a bipartisan commission, and I will be glad to lead that, where we bring people to the table and talk about what's good about the Affordable Care Act and what we can make better. It's not brain surgery, so it's something that we can all do together. Judy, regarding Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act is not the reason that Medicaid spending is going up. There are a lot of issues. There are pharmaceutical prices. There are insurance companies that are making large profits. There are a lot of different things. We've made a lot of progress in Virginia on Medicaid spending by going to a managed care system. We also have the opportunity to expand Medicaid. Right now, we are giving over $5 million a day away to surrounding states who we're competing with. And I would tell you, as a business person and as a neurologist, anybody that wants to give their competitors $5 million a day should have their heads examined.
Mr. Gillespie.
The fact is, we are seeing the Affordable Care Act drive insurers out of the marketplace and make insurance less competitive, a less competitive marketplace. With Aetna and United leaving the exchanges next year, that will bring us to more than 50 localities with only one insurer. It has denied people our choice of doctors. It has capped people's working hours to 28 hours a week instead of 40 hours a week. It's one of the problems we have here in the Commonwealth. Too many Virginians working part-time who want to work full-time. I know a woman who has a unique eye condition and eye disease, and she lost the choice of the doctor who'd been taking care of her and treating her for this painful condition because of the impact of the Affordable Care Act. And the Lieutenant Governor is strongly supportive of expanding Medicaid. The cost of that to Virginians would be $2 billion a year. When you look at the states that have accepted the Medicaid expansion, it's crowding out further and further the ability for them to spend on things like health, on education, transportation, law enforcement. Like you said, it's growing at about 8% a year. You know, We also need to make sure that people are able to get insurance by getting jobs and by getting employment and being able to afford it. And creating more than 53,000 full-time, good-paying private sector jobs is a good way to do that. The Lieutenant Governor and I have a different approach and a measure of success. He believes the more people we get on Medicaid, that is a measure of success and compassion. I believe the more people that we're able to get off of Medicaid into a good-paying job to provide for themselves and their families and know the dignity of work is a better approach to policy. We can take care of those least among us and also provide opportunities for them to provide for themselves.
Mr. Northam, rebuttal.
Yes, thank you. As far as the cost, and let's talk just a little bit, if we can, about what drives the cost of health care. First of all, we spend our resources on diseases and disorders such as cardiovascular disease, such as type 2 diabetes, such as cancers that are caused by cigarette smoking. We need to shift our focus from those types of disorders and diseases to preventive care. That's why people need access to health care. That's why I support Medicaid expansion. We're also evolving from what I would call a quantity to an outcome-based system. In other words, I'm incentivized now by how many patients I see a day. We're moving to how healthy is the population that I take care of. That's very important. We've been working on that in Virginia. And finally, precision medicine, something that I am very excited about. Being able to say exactly what's wrong with the patient and how best to treat them through data collection and data analysis. We have a chance right here in Virginia to be world leaders in precision medicine. It's already starting in Northern Virginia. That will make our individuals in
Time's
Virginia
up.
Healthier, and it will also drive our economy by diversifying our economy.
Thank you. Next question from Mr. Gillespie. Staying with health care, we've been talking about the Affordable Care Act. You've made it clear you do want to protect pre-existing conditions. You've talked about reducing the cost of premiums. Your Republican friends in Washington and the Senate right now face a tough question. They are looking at legislation. They've had a hard time deciding what to do. My question to you is, do you support simple repeal, replace within 2 years, as President Trump is calling for and a number of Republicans? And if they do go on to replace, what should it look like? What plan out there is something that you could support? And beyond that, you've made it clear you don't believe in Medicaid expansion, but there are Republican governors, Sandoval in Nevada, Kasich in Ohio, who have taken Medicare expansion, and they say it's proven essential for their citizens who are elderly, who are poor, who have disabilities. Why are they not correct?
Judy, I believe that the Medicaid expansion is not the right policy for the Commonwealth of Virginia. I think when you look at states that have done it, the impact that it's having on their budget, and that's before the full cost shift actually, you know, away from the federal government, more onto the states, is going to impose a greater burden. I ran for the United States Senate in 2014. I was the only candidate in the country who ran on a repeal and a replace, a specific plan to replace. I think you can still find it on my old website, but I'm running for governor now. EdForVirginia.com is my current website. And I do think we should repeal and replace it in a way that does not punish us for being a non-expansion state, that does protect consumers when it comes to pre-existing conditions and certain entry points in the marketplace, obviously, and that holds down the cost to consumers of out-of-pocket expenses like premiums and co-pays and deductibles. But again, I'm putting forward a plan to address health care policy in the Commonwealth of Virginia at the state level. And part of that is addressing the opioid and heroin epidemic that we're dealing with right now. I talk to families all the time, and I know Ralph does too, who are dealing with this. We are losing 3 Virginians a day on average to opioid and heroin overdoses. We have got to address this. I have a plan to do that. My opioid and heroin addiction recovery plan and mental health plan is on my website, edforvirginia.com. We do need earlier intervention. We do need to spend a little money up front, save us a lot of money at the back end.
Absolutely.
That's something you and I can agree on, Ralph.
Mr. Northam, respond.
Thank you, Ed. And, you know, I take care of a lot of sick children and their families, and nobody in this country, in the richest country in the world, should have to make a decision whether they take their child or a loved one to see the doctor or whether they stay home. So that's just immoral, and it's something that none of us should accept in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I want to talk to you just briefly about Medicaid expansion. As part of the Affordable Care Act, which again, there are a lot of things that we can approve upon, but as part of the Affordable Care Act, we are having the opportunity in Virginia, we have had since January of 2014, to bring in over $5 million a day back to the Commonwealth of Virginia. It will allow up to 400,000 working, and I would underline the word working, Virginians to have coverage that right now the only place that they have to go or have to go for medical care is the emergency room. And there's a time and a place for the emergency room, but it's not where preventive care takes place, and it is very expensive. So we need all Virginians to have access to health care if we're going to control the cost. And so finally, what I would say, just from a business perspective, and I started my medical practice in 1996. I know what it's like to start a business and grow a business. Every day that we don't expand Medicaid, we're not only leaving on the table, but we're giving away to surrounding states over $5 million a day. Since January of 2014, we've given over $10 billion to other states. And
time's up.
My opponent mentioned the opioid crisis.
Mr. Gillespie.
Think about what those
Mr. Gillespie.
Could do if we could bring them back to
Virginia. Rebuttal. You get a rebuttal.
Yeah, let's talk about attracting business to the Commonwealth of Virginia. The governor, Lieutenant Governor, thinks that it's by expanding Medicaid that's going to help us grow jobs and foster more startups and scale-ups. But the fact is, my policies of reducing taxes 10% across the board will foster economic growth among startups and scale-ups because small business owners do not pay a corporate income tax. They pay the individual income tax. Subchapter S, LLCs, sole entrepreneurs. We need to make it easier to open and grow a business here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We can't keep hammering them with regulations, and so I'm putting forward a policy that says for every new regulation we promulgate, we'll repeal or modernize two old ones. Those policies will make things better for us. The policies that the Lieutenant Governor embraced in his primary to overturn our state's right to work laws, to support higher taxes and more regulations, to impose a cap and trade carbon tax emission regime on the Commonwealth of Virginia to drive up prices and make it harder to do advanced manufacturing, to more than have a mandatory doubling of our minimum wage hike, which we've seen the impact of killing thousands of jobs in Seattle and people at the lowest wages making $125 less a month. Those policies will make things worse for us.
All right. Now it is time for Mr. Gillespie to pose a question to the Lieutenant Governor.
Ralph, I know in a I promise you that was not one of my staffers here earlier today who was protesting.
It's all good. Like I said, we're flexible.
Yeah. But I do want to talk to you about the pipeline. And the fact is that obviously it wasn't clear during the course of your primary, but it is clear now. And with the environmental impact statement of yesterday, moving forward with that pipeline, I appreciate your coming to agree with that position that I've held consistently throughout this campaign. But I do want to, you're opposed to fracking, which is the source of the natural gas that's going to flow through the pipeline.
Sure.
And so what's the point of building an empty pipeline in the Commonwealth of Virginia? It's not just that we need the pipeline, we need the affordable, reliable source of energy as well.
So I would assume you're in favor of fracking in Virginia. Is that what kind of
I support,
question?
I think fracking has demonstrated itself to be a positive impact on the economy. It's been safe and it helps to provide a reliable source of affordable energy.
Well, I disagree with you on that, just to start off with. And to your point, the fracked gas is coming from out of state. Most of it is coming from Pennsylvania. I have been very clear on my position regarding the pipeline. First of all, I would tell you, as far as attracting businesses, and by the way, if we're going to attract business to the rural Virginia areas, we need to have hospitals that are open. So back to what you were saying about expanding Medicaid, we could certainly use that money to help our hospitals. But, you know, when we talk to businesses and manufacturers and also help grow businesses in Virginia, one of the questions that they have is, do we have competitive energy here in the competitive energy costs in the Commonwealth of Virginia? And if we don't, then individuals are going to go to other states. So that's quite clear. So what I have said is that if the pipeline moves forward, it's going to be done with science. It's going to be done with transparency. It's going to be done responsibly. And at the end of the day, we're going to work with our DEQ agency and Corps of Engineers. If they deem that that's the proper way to move forward, then that's what will happen. If they say that it's unsafe, that there are rivers and streams that would
Time's
be
out.
But if there's no,
then,
but if there's no fracking, what goes through the pipeline?
Then the natural gas from Pennsylvania. I tried to answer that at the beginning. You must
so
not
you don't
listening.
Oppose fracking in Pennsylvania?
They can do what they want to do in Pennsylvania, but I do oppose fracking in the Commonwealth of Virginia because the science, the data is still out on it, Ed.
Okay.
We don't know that it's safe.
Well, that answers the question.
Well, I'm glad I was able to answer your question, so thank you.
All right, is that's your rebuttal? All right, now the
oh,
next.
No, I get more than that
you do
for
get
rebuttal.
A, okay, you get. Yeah. So you get.
Look, energy policy is important here, very important, and it's one of the areas where we have a clear difference. The Lieutenant Governor just talked about, you know, he supports the Paris Accords and holding Virginia to the Paris Accords with the country out of it. Our surrounding states, none of the states are going to hold to the Paris Accords, and imposing that on the Commonwealth of Virginia and imposing a clean power plan and a cap and trade carbon emission limits on the Commonwealth of Virginia when other states are not, is not going to have an impact on climate change or air quality internationally. What it is going to do is it's going to result in fewer jobs in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and not just in coal country. Everywhere. Make it harder for us to foster advanced manufacturing, to attract new business formation here, to foster new business formation here, and it will hit hardest the poorest among us who get hit hardest by rising electric bills and cost of electricity. And I will fight not only for our coal miners and for our factory workers, but for the poorest families who get hit hard by skyrocketing electric bills under the kind of policies Lieutenant Governor supports. My policies make things better. His will make things worse.
Thank you. We will continue with questions from the moderator, and this is all by coin toss. The first one here in this round goes to Mr. Gillespie. Taxes. You have talked about your tax plan. You want to cut income, individual income taxes across the state by 10%, again, across the board over 3 years. But you know that some other Republican-run states, like Kansas, enacted tax cuts, and they backfired. They did not produce the growth that was promised. They drained resources from critical needs like rural health care, infrastructure, education. And I want to quote a columnist from a newspaper here in Virginia, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, Jeff Shapiro. He cited the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Commission, which points out that Virginia already ranks 36th among 50 states in per capita state taxes. It ranks 44th in state and local taxes as a percentage of personal income. So yeah, that and the Kansas point.
Yeah, our rankings are not good when it comes to tax policy in the Commonwealth. It's one of the problems we have, not just at the state level, but at local levels. And I want to work with our localities to identify more business productive taxation than the business professional occupation license tax, the BPOL tax, the machinery and tools tax, or the merchant capital tax, all of which have a negative impact on business formation and expansion in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But on the state level, I do want to cut our individual income tax rates 10% across the board, phase that in over 3 years. It would be the first cut in our individual income tax rates in 45 years. Since they were put in place in 1972. It is time for us to provide relief to become more competitive with surrounding states. We can do it in a way based on the projection of future growth revenue to our coffers in Richmond. That's what other states have done, Judy. Kansas didn't, but other states, 11 states, have put their tax rate relief in or tax cuts in place based on triggers. If the revenue doesn't come in, you wouldn't have the rate reduction. So we would guard against shock, you know, to the system and make sure that we are protecting core critical government functions. But the reason we've had challenges in our budgeting in Richmond over the past 3 years in terms of revenue shortfalls is because too many Virginians are working part-time who want to work full-time. We hit a 10-year low in labor force participation rate last year, and our economic growth is stagnant. And since the Lieutenant Governor was first elected to the General Assembly 10 years ago, we have shed 69,000 manufacturing jobs. We're trading out high-paying jobs for low-paying jobs. All of that results in less revenue. We've got to create good-paying jobs. Mine will create 53,000 full-time, good-paying private sector jobs. That will help us with revenue.
Mr. Northam, response.
Well, thank you, Judy. And you mentioned the revenue shortfall, and I think if you've kept up with the latest news, we just announced we had a surplus of $132 million.
That'll make the tax relief easier.
That's good news for the Commonwealth
of
Virginia.
And help with tax cuts, too.
Now, I started my business in 1996, a medical practice with 30 other pediatric subspecialists. I know all about taxes, and I know that we need a system that is fairer, that is simpler, and it's more progressive and fiscally responsible for the Commonwealth of Virginia. My opponent's plan, this plan that he just reviewed, and by the way, as the moderator pointed out, has had some serious problems in Kansas to the point where the legislature has had to go around the governor and raise taxes because of that plan. So this plan will actually will threaten our AAA bond rating, which we hold very sacred in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and it will take resources away from education, resources away from health care, transportation, first responders. It's irresponsible. It would put a $1.3 billion hole in our economy over the next few years. We can't do that. We've got too many things on the table that are priorities. I have a plan. It's called comprehensive tax reform. It means bringing Republicans and Democrats to the table and coming up with a system that is fairer, that is simpler, and that's fiscally responsible, and something that both sides of the aisle can agree on and move forward in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
So just to be clear, Ralph's plan is to have a plan. Ralph's plan is to come up with a plan. I've got a plan. We don't have time to waste. If the next governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia does not respond to the challenges we face with the right policies and with a sense of urgency, we will fail our fellow Virginians. I have that sense of urgency. I have those plans, and I will not fail us. We've got to hit the ground running. We are stuck. And the only thing that's going to get us unstuck is by changing our policies. And I know we can do this in a fiscally responsible manner. I have worked with the leaders of the money committees in our General Assembly. They have endorsed it. They support it. It is not like the Kansas plan. It is much more like what's going on in North Carolina, where they are actually seeing, as they bring down their rates, increases in revenue, and they triggered theirs, and I would trigger mine as well. It would not jeopardize the AAA rating. In fact, it would foster 53,000 plus full-time private sector, good-paying jobs all across the Commonwealth of Virginia. That is a 25% increase over current projections.
Okay. The next question is for Mr. Northam. Continuing on the economy.
Yes.
In general, people look at the state of Virginia, they say the economy looks strong. Your unemployment rate that was announced yesterday has gone down yet again to 3.7%. You do have a high labor force participation rate. However, as Mr. Gillespie's pointed out, Virginia's ranking as a top state for business has slipped from just a few years ago. Forbes magazine, CNBC have both said this. Forbes attributes it to higher business costs. What would you do to reverse this?
Well, thank you, Judy. And, you know, I'm interested in hearing Mr. Gillespie's comments, because what he's really doing is cherry picking, and he's rooting, he's cheering against the economy in the Commonwealth of Virginia that we work very hard on to build the new Virginia economy, and I'm very proud of that. And as you said, our unemployment rate is at 3.7%. It's the lowest that it's been since 2008, since we came out of the recession. And I believe, Mr. Gillespie, I saw a clip of you that when you were campaigning for Mr. Romney, that you all were so proud that their unemployment rate in Massachusetts had come to 4.7. So what's the deal with not showing us any love? 3.7 is a whole percentage point less than 4.7. So, you know, just be kind. We're working hard. And, you know, to hear him talk, the economy is going to hell in a handbasket. It's not. We're doing good things. We planted great seeds in some very fertile soil here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we're on a good trajectory. How can we make it better? You know, as was said earlier, we have always been very dependent on the military and government contracting, and we always will be. But the jobs, and this is key, the jobs of the 21st century are in what we call STEAM-related areas, science, technology, engineering, the arts and math, things like cybersecurity, unmanned aerial systems, artificial intelligence, data collection, data analysis. Those are the jobs. So once we know what the jobs of the 21st century are, how do we prepare the workforce? We've worked with our colleges and universities, making them more affordable. We have the community college system, apprenticeships, even increased emphasis.
Time is up.
I can see it too, Mr. Gillespie. But even increased emphasis at the high school level on vocational and technical training. Good things are happening here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
I'd rather have a low unemployment rate than a high unemployment rate any day. But as Tom Perriello pointed out in your Democratic primary in the race to the left, he said, you know, the unemployment rate is not as significant in terms of measuring the impact of the economy or the benefits of the economy as it used to be, because it's capturing a lot of part-time workers who want to work full-time. It's capturing a lot of people who are working in lower wage jobs than they want to be working in, not commensurate with their degrees. It is not measuring the fact that we've been swapping out high-paying jobs for low-paying jobs for a decade, and it doesn't capture the fact that what contributes to that, too, is the fact we hit the lowest labor force participation rate in a decade last year. We've got to get good-paying jobs going on here in Virginia. You know, the fact is, for the past 3 years, more people have moved out of Virginia than into Virginia. That had never happened before, since we started collecting that data in 1978. And now more people are moving out than moving in, and a lot of it are people who are unable to find opportunities here. A lot of our young people graduating from our high schools and colleges and community colleges and universities unable to find a career path here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. A lot of retirees move into states that are more attractive to them with their tax rates. And so we have got to fix this. And nobody's running down, look, one thing, Ralph, obviously you and I are both running for the governorship of the Commonwealth of Virginia because we love it.
Yes, we do.
And I want to make it better. And I'm not running down. I'm saying we are not where we should be. When you are 39th out of 50 states and you should be number one in the country, we are not where we should be, and I will get us there.
Mr. Northam, you have a rebuttal.
Well, thank you, Judy. And one of our challenges in Virginia as we bring skills to jobs is college affordability. Pam and I raised two children, Wes and Aubrey. One went to UVA and the other went to William & Mary. We've got to make sure that the American dream is there for all Virginians. And so one of the things that I have done is realize that the jobs of the 21st century are not really what we call blue or white collar. They're new collar jobs. And that means that you don't necessarily have to have a four-year education to get a good high-paying job in Virginia. So I have a plan. It's called the G3. Get skilled, get a job, and give back. This allows individuals in Virginia to go to our community colleges or an apprenticeship cost-free with the understanding that once they become certified, they'll give back a year of service, a public service, in the Commonwealth of Virginia. You know, I had the United States Army support my education, and everybody needs some skin in the game, so I encourage you all to go to my website and look up the G3 program, get skilled, get a job, and give back, and it will help drive this economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Now it is your turn, Mr. Northam, to pose a question to Mr. Gillespie.
I want to know where these pipeline people came from, Mr. Gillespie. No. There's quite a coincidence. Just kidding.
I promise you, they didn't come from my side.
You have to have a sense of humor in this business. So, you know, Ed, one thing I think that we can agree on is that the less unplanned pregnancies here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the better. And so something that I have worked on is really increasing access to what we call LARCs, which are long-acting reversible contraceptives. We know that these are the most effective and safest forms of contraception in 2017. So I was able to obtain $6 million a year of what we call TANF money. It didn't come out of the general fund. And that was to be used to increase access and also to educate providers on how to implant these devices. The implantables obviously go under the skin, and then an IUD is inserted into the cervix. But so I had $6 million. Last year and then this year in the budget that was non-general fund money. And my question to you is, would you support such a budget amendment?
Well, I would look at that, Ralph. I would tell you that obviously a woman who is dealing with an unplanned pregnancy, any women dealing with that are dealing oftentimes in crisis and deserve our love and our support and our compassion. I believe that, you know, Virginia, we should be the most adoption-friendly state in the country. There's more we need to do to improve our foster care system. As you know, we are very, very low in terms of people and our young people in foster care being able to get permanency. We've got to improve that. I do believe in terms of, for example, and have said publicly that I believe that oral contraceptives, the pill, according to the College of, or the, you would know better, the OBGYNs Association, you know, they said, I think about 10 years ago now, that there's no reason for the pill to be a prescription drug, and it should be available over the counter. I would support that. I think it should be behind the counter, but over the counter. And as for the $6 million, I will take a look at that and dig deeper into that TANF money and you know, get back to you with an answer. But I'm not familiar, I'll be honest with you, I'm not familiar with your language that you put in there, nearly as familiar as you are with it.
Right.
Mr. Northam.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, I would just emphasize when you want to take care of all Virginians, and we're going to have an open door policy in Virginia and welcome people to the Commonwealth of Virginia, reproductive freedom really equates to economic freedom. And so we need to really let women across the Commonwealth of Virginia make a decision of what's best for her body. And what I have stood up against in my 10 years in Richmond are the continued attacks on access to women's reproductive health care, starting with the transvaginal ultrasound bill, which put us on late night comedy shows. Then we had the trap laws, and then we had the personhood bill that I know you're familiar with, Mr. Gillespie. And our people on the Republican side say that these types of legislation are to make it safer for women. No, no. They're to shame a woman in a decision that is constitutionally their right and should be made between the woman, her partner, and her provider. So it's time. There is no excuse in the Commonwealth of Virginia that legislators, most of whom are men, continue to tell women what they should and shouldn't be doing with their bodies.
Time
that has to stop in Virginia.
All right. All right. Now we're back to moderator questions. And again, by coin toss, we turn to Mr. Northam. And just to be clear, I was going to ask a question about the pipeline, but just to be clear, you are for these pipelines going through the state of Virginia. Is that correct?
As I said, Judy, I'm for responsible placement of the pipelines. It protects our environment. And if they are deemed safe and responsible and environmentally responsible, then and we do that through agencies that we have in place, the DEQ and the Corps of Engineers right here in Virginia. So if they deem them safe and responsible, then the pipelines will move forward, and I will certainly support that. If they don't, then I will not support it. And the final point I want to make, Judy, is that, you know, I think anybody that stands up and says, I'm going to make the pipeline happen or I'm not, is really pandering, because at the end of the day, this is a federal project. It comes from West Virginia, goes through Virginia into North Carolina. So we can do everything that we can in Virginia to make it safe and transparent. But at the end of the day, FERC will make that final decision, the Energy Review Commission. And so I support all of that process.
And Mr. Gillespie, you are, just to be clear on where you stand on the pipeline, you're in favor of it, but you don't have these same concerns about the environment.
No, of course. We had a final environmental impact statement out yesterday that said they can be done environmentally sensitive. And my point is they're good for the Commonwealth of Virginia. The construction alone will create 8,800 good-paying jobs, and then over 1,000 more long-term good-paying jobs as a result of the energy infrastructure. But I support them. Now, we're going to comply with all of the federal laws in the process of doing that, but I think they're a good thing for the Commonwealth of Virginia. And the Lieutenant Governor has finally gotten there with his primary behind him now, and I'm glad that he's there. But when you don't support the source of the energy, you know, that's going to flow through it, it's a little baffling, but I get it. It's in Pennsylvania, okay. But, you know, we need energy, affordable, reliable energy in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I think that the pipelines are a positive thing for us.
Judy, if I could just make a quick point, and it's all about being safe and responsible and also protecting people's property rights.
I agree with that.
We have eminent domain laws here in Virginia, but I'm the only person in the administration that has communicated with the DEQ and actually written a letter to the DEQ asking them to change the permitting process from what we call a blanket permit to a site-specific. And they followed my lead. So I'm doing everything I can in Virginia to promote business, to promote jobs, but I want to do it in an environmentally safe way.
All right. We did that one in a shorter round because the two of you had already discussed the pipeline at some length. Mr. Gillespie, the next question goes to you first. And again, this is something I got a lot of questions from the VBA members submitted on, and that's transportation. 4 years ago, Republican Governor Bob McDonnell, whose campaign you chaired, won approval of a plan for road maintenance, highway construction, and mass transit funding, especially in the Hampton Roads area and in Northern Virginia. Now, you've criticized your opponent for supporting that measure, specifically the tax increases that financed it. My question is, was that measure good for Virginia? And as governor, how would you finance transportation?
Yeah, let's be clear. I didn't criticize him for the transportation, but what I criticize him for is a long record of supporting tax increases in the General Assembly and everywhere else, for that matter.
I'm glad you cleared that up.
Not just I had a lot of my supporters in the General Assembly voted for that package. My friend Bob McDonnell obviously led the charge on it. The Lieutenant Governor voted for it as a state senator. People voted their districts on that bill, and I respect that. But a lot of my supporters who voted for it didn't support putting a new tax on tanning beds or increasing fishing fees or support a medical device tax, a health insurance tax, or an increase in the personal income tax in the Affordable Care Act that the Lieutenant Governor supports. And so this is about who's going to be for reducing taxes or for higher taxes as the next governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. I am for a 10% across the board rate cut. A lot of those supporters of mine in the Assembly who voted for it are for that too, and he is not. I will make sure we implement the funding for transportation in a much more careful way and in a way that gets more bang for our buck, because unlike the Lieutenant Governor, I will not require and impose project labor agreements and prevailing wage requirements on the contractors who do these projects, which does reward labor unions, but it does not, it drives up the cost of the projects, and then we're not able to get as many projects implemented. And I support a lockbox for our transportation funding to make sure that we are putting our transportation dollars into transportation. So if I'm governor, we're actually going to get more mileage out of that money, literally, than if the lieutenant governor is elected governor.
Mr. Northam responds.
Now, this is interesting to hear how this process has evolved, because I believe, and I don't want to misquote you, you call me an angry liberal for supporting what you called was the, said was the largest tax increase in the history of Virginia, which was the transportation plan. So I had the attack coming in, and then when he realized that people were saying, well, you know, that was actually a bill that was put on the table in 2013 by Governor McDonnell, and it had bipartisan support. So then he said he wouldn't repeal it if that option came up. And then he was talking, and this is what I read in the paper, so I hope it's accurate.
Oh, I'm sure it must be then.
Yes, sir. that he was talking to a Republican colleague in Virginia Beach, and after that conversation, Mr. Gillespie said, well, if you all support it, I support it. Now, I know you lawyers like to use terms, and I guess we would call that duplicity. But on the Eastern Shore, where I'm from, we call it talking out of both sides of your mouth. And we don't need people that stick their finger up and see which way the winds are blowing. We need people that are firm in what they believe in. And I will tell you, as a business owner, having supported the ports, having supported Dulles Airport, there is nothing more important than transportation as we build the new Virginia economy. And I hope Governor Bilalas is in the audience, but you know, we hadn't had any new revenue for transportation since 1986. Now we have billions of dollars coming into the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I suspect every one of you, when you drove to the homestead, used some of the new roads that we're funding with this. So transportation is important.
Time's up.
And yes, I was proud in a bipartisan way to support the 2013 McDonnell transportation plan.
Transportation is an issue everywhere in the Commonwealth. Everywhere I go, I talk about transportation. You know, we say when you're in Southwest Virginia, it's an hour between towns. When you're in Northern Virginia, it's an hour between towns, but the towns are 5 miles apart. It's something we've got to address in both places, and we've got to get the most out of our transportation dollars. And as I noted, I will implement the funding for transportation much more effectively than will the Lieutenant Governor, because I will not impose government-mandated project labor agreements with the labor unions or prevailing wage requirements, and that drive up the costs of these projects, and therefore we can do fewer projects. I'll make sure we spend that money more efficiently, get that money out the door. I've also got a transportation plan I will be unveiling this summer. Detailed plans, go to my website, edforvirginia.com. You can see my detailed policies. Unlike the Lieutenant Governor, you can see press releases there. On mine, you can see plans, and transportation will be one of them. But we will get bang for our buck, more mileage out of our money with my approach to transportation funding than with the Lieutenant Governor's if he's elected. That's a fact.
All right. Now, next question for Mr. Northam. The two of you, I think it's fair to say there's a pretty large divide between the two of you on social issues. One of them has already come up. But Lieutenant Governor, you have said you personally oppose the death penalty,
yes,
as does Governor McAuliffe. But he recently declined to stop the execution of a man who was deemed mentally ill by a psychiatrist, even as the daughter of one of the men he murdered opposed the execution. Would you have acted differently from the governor?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question, Judy, excuse me. And, you know, I admire Governor McAuliffe, and that was probably one of the most difficult decisions that he has ever had to make. And he looked at it, he really looked at the records, and he did what he thought was in the best interest of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So I commend Governor McAuliffe for doing that. I do not agree with the death penalty. I support life in prison without parole. And I would also say that I have a tremendous sympathy in my heart for people that go through these tremendous tragedies. And so we certainly need to support them as well. But I think what we need to look at as a society is how we keep people from getting to the point where they commit these heinous crimes. And so I have a plan to interrupt that high school or that school to prison pipeline, and I have outlined that. But one of the things that we need to do is very simple, and it talks about criminal justice reform. It is things like increasing the felony larceny from 200 to 500. Someone could pick up a cell phone now and be charged and end up with a felony. So things like that need to be looked at. I also think we should really take better care of our adolescents. They're being put into detention centers. We're stopping that. We're keeping them in communities where they have counselors and mentors. And then finally, something that, you know, my father's a judge, as most of you all know. He's always said, Ralph, why is Virginia spending $67 million a year to enforce marijuana laws? We really need to sit down at the table and look at decriminalizing marijuana and then being able to use marijuana for medical purposes. So a lot of things we need to do for
time
criminal justice reform, and I do have a plan for that.
Mr. Gillespie.
Was not critical of the governor for his decision, and made clear that, in my view, this is one of the powers of our governorship. I mean, all the authority of the governorship obviously has a big impact on the future of the Commonwealth we love. But when it comes to this responsibility, it's a very somber, serious responsibility. I do support the death penalty in cases where we've had heinous crimes, and it's something that I would weigh very carefully. Mental health would be a factor in a decision as to whether or not to grant clemency in that case. But I don't have the information that the governor has at his disposal in making that decision. That's information essentially only the governor has at his disposal, and so I'm not going to second guess him on that. I think there are some things where we ought to set aside
sure.
some partisanship and understand that this is a solemn responsibility of the governorship and one I would treat that way. On law enforcement issues, there are, you know, my policies will make us safer as a Commonwealth. For example, we just talked about, heinous crimes. We had a heinous crime up near me in Northern Virginia not too long ago where a young woman, 17 years old, celebrating, we're in the midst of Ramadan, was beaten to death, 17 years old. With a baseball bat by someone here illegally. And I do believe that we should make sure we do not allow for the establishment of sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And as governor, I would sign a bill to ban it. The lieutenant governor cast a tie-breaking vote against that. I don't think that makes us safer in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I think that's a significant difference between us in this election.
Mr. Northrup.
Well, I think the sanctuary city law that I did break the tie on was just another example of K Street political ploys. We don't have sanctuary cities in Virginia.
And we won't if I'm governor.
So I do believe in locking up violent criminals, no matter what their status is. I also believe in allowing our local law enforcement agents to do their job and not interfere with what ICE is doing. And then finally, when we talk about immigration reform, we need Congress to do its job and to do comprehensive immigration reform that would deal with a lot of these issues. I want to go back to how we prevent our children from ever getting to the point where they would commit a heinous crime, because if you look at their histories, they've had tough lives, most of them. They've not had the opportunities that some of us have had. And something that I feel strongly about as a parent and as a child neurologist, Judy, is early childhood education. And I have worked very hard to make sure that all of our children in Virginia have access to pre-K. It's a time where they're very impressionable. And I remind people that if one family has the means to send their children to pre-K and another doesn't, that's really what starts the gap between the haves and the have-nots. And so we need to give all of our children in the Commonwealth the same opportunity.
Next question for Mr. Gillespie. And again, you've just begun to touch on this, and that's immigration. Virginia does have a growing Hispanic population. We know all politicians are for protecting the borders, for going after any illegals with serious criminal records. But President Trump goes much further than that. He has vowed to deport millions of undocumented workers, and the fate of some 12,000 dreamers here in Virginia who came to the United States as children and largely were protected under President Obama and his policies, their fate is now uncertain. There are governors who are saying they're going to challenge President Trump legally on this. Would you join them?
Judy, I'm proud to be the son of an immigrant to this country. My father came here, like I said, as a boy from Ireland because his father was able to find work as a janitor. But he came here legally, processed through Ellis Island. And I always say Jack Gillespie was born in Donegal, Ireland, but he died a great American. He's buried in a veteran cemetery alongside my mother, Silver Star recipient for his adopted country. And I know that we can be a welcoming commonwealth, but a secure commonwealth at the same time. And we do have to enforce our immigration laws, and I do not believe that cities or counties should be free to pick and choose what laws they can enforce and declare themselves a sanctuary city. I agree we don't have any, but we should make sure we don't ever. And to say we should lock them up, yes, but we should also, if someone is here illegally and they commit a violent crime, we should cooperate with the federal government and they should be deported. We have had in Northern Virginia, I was out with on a ride along with the Northern Virginia Gang Task Force just this week, earlier this week. We've had 8 MS-13 related murders in Northern Virginia since November, almost one a month on average. And the greatest danger posed by not enforcing illegal immigration policies and for allowing for sanctuary cities, for issuing state driver's licenses to people who are here illegally, the greatest threat of criminal activity by illegal immigrants is in the immigrant community itself. They are the ones most victimized, and I will make sure that they're protected and safe.
Mr. Northam.
Well, the question was about the Dreamers Act, and children that have grown up and gone to our schools in Virginia, I do believe should have access to our universities and colleges and have access to in-state tuition. So I have supported that in the past, and I always will. I wanted to just touch briefly on this travel ban. And Ed, I travel around. I've been to Dulles Airport, and I've watched the fear on those individuals' faces. I've talked to families that are living in fear because of the fear-mongering that's coming out of Washington right now, and you have really been missing in action on that issue. And
I talked about my point about the green cards earlier, Ralph.
One of the things that really bothers me as a veteran, I served during Desert Storm. Iraqis were by our side, helping not only with intelligence, but also interpretation. It is wrong for the United States of America to turn their backs on the very individuals that help protect our freedoms. I won't let that happen as the next governor of the Commonwealth. And finally, I'd like to say that Terry McAuliffe just vetoed his 120th piece of legislation that discriminates against things like women's access to reproductive health care, discriminates against the LGBTQ community, and discriminates against immigration. We live in a very diverse society. That means that Virginia has to be inclusive. Our lights have to be on. Our doors have to be open. We will welcome people to the Commonwealth of Virginia as long as Ralph Northam has anything to do with it.
Rebuttal, Mr. Gillespie.
Well, I don't. A couple things. Look,
and if you could address the Dreamer question.
Well, let's do that right now because I disagree with Ralph on this. Look, I know that young people who are here by virtue of a decision their parents made, they're here for no fault of their own. I sympathize with that. I empathize with that. But we have scarce tax dollars, and we have a hard enough time getting people who are here legally and who are citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia access to affordable public college educations. And if someone, by the way, who's grown up in Virginia 15 years, had their heart set on going to one of our great public colleges or universities, and their parents move out of state to another state, they didn't make that decision either, but they're not going to be able to get in-state tuition. And to give in-state tuition and slots to illegal immigrants and spend our scarce taxpayer dollars on that instead of on students who have a hard enough time getting into our colleges and universities and getting access to that in-state tuition. We just have a fundamental disagreement. My heart goes out to folks, but you've got to make tough decisions as governor, and I don't think that's the right use of our taxpayer dollars, in all honesty.
So would you end the DACA, the Dreamer program? What are you saying?
I've talked about what I can do in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm running for the governorship of the Commonwealth of Virginia. That's where we have a policy interface.
So would you challenge, if the president goes ahead with ending that program, would you challenge?
It's a federal policy. The attorney general, I guess, could look at it. I don't think our attorney general nominee would. But no, that would not be my intention.
The next question goes to Mr. Northam. I just want to continue this. Let's help the voters of Virginia understand the difference between the two of you on this question of the Dreamers and what to do about undocumented immigrants in the state.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that. And I think I've already made it clear, Judy, the Dreamers Act is to allow children. And by the way, there is power in every child, and it shouldn't depend on where they come from or who their parents are, but we want to make sure that they have access to higher education, just like all the rest of our children. And so the Dreamers Act is to allow them to go to our colleges and universities in Virginia and have in-state tuition. Now, college affordability, if you want to talk about that, is something that's important, and I have a plan. And one of the reasons, Ed, that you know we have a rise in cost of higher education is because the General Assembly has underfunded our public universities and colleges. And so, you know, some of them, like University of Virginia and William and Mary, are actually less than 10%. And so we can't continue on that trajectory if we want to talk about college affordability. And as I said earlier, I have a plan on the table to help individuals into higher education through 2 years of free community college. That's called the G3 program. Going back to immigration status, Judy, I have been very clear on that. I think that anybody that commits a violent crime should be locked up. It doesn't matter what their status is. I think that local law enforcement officials should be allowed to do their job. ICE should be allowed to do their job. And finally, as Ed just mentioned, we need comprehensive reform with immigration. And that's something that is a federal issue and something that the Congress needs to take up.
So, Mr. Gillespie, I guess I'm just asking the two of you to clarify further what your differences are on this, on immigration.
He is for in-state tuition for illegal immigrants, and I am not.
And that's it?
I believe our local jurisdictions should comply with federal law when it comes to cooperating with the federal government when an illegal immigrant here commits a crime. And should not just lock them up, but should cooperate with the federal government for them to be deported. Those are pretty significant differences between us. And I don't believe that people who are here illegally should be issued legal certification, state issued legal certification in the form of driver's licenses, and he does.
Mr. Northam.
Right.
No, well, I can answer for myself, Ed. Yeah. No problem here. But you know, I think he has made it clear. I would just say, Ed, go out there and talk to some of our brightest students. You live up in Northern Virginia that are at the schools there, and they've come up through families from immigrants that perhaps were undocumented. But they've played by the rules. They've gone to school, our public schools in most cases, and have done well. And why shouldn't they have the same opportunity? It's no fault of their own, and I understand what you're saying about their parents, but they should have the same opportunity that your and my neighbors have and that our children have had. So that's the fundamental difference. And again, it's about taking care of all Virginians, and I know you've said that, but it's something that we need to be inclusive in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
And I am going to make life better for all Virginians. And look, like I said, I empathize. I can relate. I am the child of an immigrant who came here legally and did play by the rules. And you know this is just an area where we've clearly got some differences.
It is.
And I would say too, if I can on college affordability, and I know you've put forward a plan like Bernie Sanders and others for free college, community college in the Commonwealth of Virginia, you think it's expensive now, wait until he tries to make it free. And I have met with all 15 of our public college and university presidents across the Commonwealth, and I have a plan to have college be more affordable, but it's not going to be by free college, because the impact of that on taxpayers is going to be huge down the line.
Rebuttal.
Sure. And thank you for that, Judy. But, it's about the American dream for folks. And you know, it's about investing in our future, investing in our youth, investing in workforce development. You talked earlier today about our economy is not doing that well, but we have jobs across Virginia in high-tech areas that are unfilled right now. So let's, make that pipeline accessible to all Virginians. Yeah. And so you mentioned my G3 program, which is get skilled, get a job, and give back. And yes, it is. It's 2 years free college or apprenticeship with the understanding that once one becomes certified, they give back. I underline the word give back a year of public service in either a high demand area of the Commonwealth, such as rural Virginia, or in a high demand field. And so it's a good plan. It trains individuals for these new collar jobs, and it will help everybody achieve the American dream.
Next question for Mr. Gillespie. I mentioned the divide between the two of you on social issues. I want to ask you about guns. You have been a supporter of the National Rifle Association. You oppose, as I understand it, almost all gun control laws. My question is, what, if any, limits do you support? For instance, do you support banning carrying guns into restaurants and bars in Virginia, on college campuses? Any other limits at all?
Well, let me just say, first of all, the NRA is a supporter of mine, which I appreciate, and I am a proponent of our Second Amendment individual right to keep and bear arms. That is an amendment that has been infringed upon under the current administration. I believe people who are law-abiding citizens should be free to exercise that right, as they are free to exercise all other rights. You talked about, if you look at the data, there was just a study that came out earlier this week that showed a correlation between the states that have adopted concealed carry laws and their crime and violent crimes, gun crimes coming down is the correlation. And so I think the science suggests that allowing for people to exercise that Second Amendment right has resulted in less violent criminal activity. And, you know, the Lieutenant Governor talks about science all the time. There's some science for you. And I think that we ought to protect that Second Amendment right like we protect every other rights. And as governor, I would. And I would, for example, allow for law-abiding citizens to be able to carry a gun into the public offices that the current governor has, public buildings the current governor has imposed an executive order ban on. I would roll that back.
Mr. Northam.
Well, thank you, Judy. And a clear distinction between Mr. Gillespie. Mr. Gillespie has an A rating from the NRA. Ralph Northam has an F rating, and I am very proud of my F rating. I would also tell you that I am an assistant professor at Eastern Virginia Medical School. I teach pathophysiology, and I teach medical ethics. And you know what? The students aren't always real happy with perhaps the grade that they get. The last thing that I want and the last thing that my wife wants as a teacher is to have students in the classroom that have firearms. We don't need guns in our schools, and we don't need guns on our college campuses. And I have a unique perspective. I grew up on the Eastern Shore. I hunted and fished, Ed, as you know, but I also served in the United States Army. And I have taken care of wounded soldiers who have been on the receiving end of assault weapons. I know all too well what assault weapons do to human beings. I have also held 2-, 3-, 4-year-old toddlers in my arms who have picked up a loaded firearm from the bedside table and either shot themselves or shot a sibling or sometimes their parents. And I have been on the receiving end of calls from my patients who have been shot and killed through domestic violence. So we have a gun issue, and I think it's something that we can all agree there should be responsible gun ownership, just like we have responsibility for people behind the wheels of automobiles. Let's sit down as a society and realize that we have an issue, and we don't need any more tragedies like what happened at Virginia Tech 10 years ago, when 32 precious individuals lost their lives. We as a society need to stand up and say, enough guns, we need to sit down, and we need to advocate for common sense and responsible gun ownership.
Mr. Gillespie, rebuttal.
I think Ralph summed it up pretty well. He's got an F from the NRA. I have an A from the NRA. We have a difference in terms of our view about protecting the Second Amendment individual right to keep and bear arms. I am a protector of it. He is not, and you know that's one of the choices in this election, and I base that approach to policy on the data that I have seen that shows that when you limit people's Second Amendment rights, you do not make the citizenry safer, and that's my view.
Judy, if I could just follow up very quickly, I'm not about taking people's guns or taking their Second Amendment rights away from them, but there are some things that if we can sit down and agree, and I think most Virginians would agree, things like universal background checks, that's not threatening the Second Amendment to make sure that individuals that carry firearms and that have possession of them are safe with them. Things like one gun a month, Ed, you know, that was in place, that was from Governor Doug Wilder, and then it was repealed during the McDonald and that administration, and now we have a pipeline from Virginia up to New York. I'm sure you saw that in the news just a few months ago. It is so easy to buy all the guns you want right here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, take them, not only disperse them in Virginia, but also take them into New York. That's not something that Virginia should be proud of. And so there are some common sense things that we can do to promote responsible gun ownership.
Mr. Gillespie, you get a second rebuttal, if you want. We
have background checks now, as you know, for gun dealers, and you would impose further restrictions, and I would not.
Okay. All right. We have time for just two, I think, truncated, shorter questions here at the end. Mr. Northam, you serve with, you're close with Governor McAuliffe. You mentioned the difference you might have with him on the death penalty, at least in this one instance. What are just two policy differences you have with Governor McAuliffe so we can understand how, in some ways, you would govern differently?
Well, just so I say, I don't disagree with Governor McAuliffe on the death penalty. I hope that I didn't make that unclear, but I do not support the death penalty. I support life in prison without parole. And I said that his was a very difficult decision, but he followed the law of Virginia. And so that's something I commended him for. As far as things that we don't agree on, and Governor Terry McAuliffe and Dorothy have been great leaders in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I tell people they've been the right people at the right time in Virginia and have just been such great ambassadors and great leaders. And as I said earlier in the day, 195,000 new jobs into the Commonwealth of Virginia, an unemployment rate of 3.7%. That's great work, especially after coming out of recession. So Governor McAuliffe and I have a great relationship. Judy, to your question, we do have a difference on one policy issue, and that's offshore drilling. I am promoting renewable energy in the Commonwealth of Virginia, wind, solar, as does Governor McAuliffe, and we have made great strides in that area. But I do not support offshore drilling. I come from the Eastern Shore of Virginia. We have NASA wallops that we take care of, and they've been a tremendous shot in the arm economically for the Eastern Shore. They have logistical issues with offshore drilling. We have the military, the United States Navy, that trains off of our coast. We need to do everything that we can to keep them in the area. We have aquaculture on the Eastern Shore of Virginia, the growing of clams and oysters, which is a $75 million industry. So I am opposed to offshore drilling. I have been outspoken about that. Terry's not, and that's something that we can work through together.
Mr. Gillespie.
All the things I disagree with Terry McAuliffe on. How much more time do we have in this debate?
Do you just want to pick up on the offshore drilling question?
I think we should have the prerogative develop the natural gas and oil resources off of our deep sea coast. And I know that we can do that in an environmentally sensitive way, in respect and working with the Navy in that regard. And I think that long term it would be positive in terms of its impact on the Commonwealth of Virginia. The fact is, in the short term, not likely to have much of an effect. One, we've got to do more seismic testing, and that's going to take a long time. And two, given the nature of the marketplace right now and the cost of offshore development and exploration and the affordability because of the shale revolution and fracking having unlocked so much energy production on land, it's not likely that we would be doing any development off our deep sea coast anytime soon. That said, I do think we should have the prerogative as a Commonwealth, if there is a time when the marketplace calls on and demands it, to do it in an environmentally sensitive manner, working with the Navy to ensure. And as I mentioned earlier, I do support funding for our Chesapeake Bay cleanup fund. I was out with Waterman Ralph just the other day in Pocosin, and there's no doubt. Critically important part of our Commonwealth's economy. We need to protect the Chesapeake Bay and the cleanness of our water. But I believe we can do those things and allow for the opportunity when the time comes for good-paying jobs and affordable energy.
All right, we're going to go to a final quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
And this is for Mr. Gillespie. One of the contributing factors to this country's deep political polarization is gerrymandering or congressional districts. The drawing of lines in order basically to bolster one political party over another. Democrats do it. We've seen that in Virginia. Republicans do it. We've seen it with Democrats in Maryland. We see it with Republicans here in Virginia. In the 2016 congressional elections here in Virginia, Democrats actually got more votes for Congress, but 7 of 11 congressional seats went to Republicans. We now know that a number of states have set up some form of independent or bipartisan redistricting commission. Would you favor that for Virginia?
I've looked at this, Judy, before. And in fact, there was just an article last week, I think it was, where they showed the maps from some states where they have, you know, the partisan redistricting done by our, you know, by our state legislatures, and compared, you know, maps that were done by nonpartisan commissions and that kind of thing. They don't look a lot different. They don't look a lot different. It's hard to take the politics out of politics. And so I think that the precision with which we can, you know, draw district lines today and does that contribute to increased polarization? I think it does, probably. One of the only places where you really see the nonpartisan commission approach work is Iowa, which is a rectangle, and they cut it into four quadrants. And that's, you know, pretty simple. But when you look at the experience in other places that have done it, and you look at some of those maps, the desired impact is not what those who support it in theory it translates into in practice.
Mr. Northam.
Well, it's not impossible. We had to take the politics out of politics, and I understand what you're saying because you were the architect of what we see now as current day gerrymandering, and so I understand why you don't want to take the politics
out of it. Well, it was Elbridge Gerry.
Ed, let me just finish you. I haven't been interrupting you, so I appreciate the common courtesy, but I ran for the state senate in 2007. At that time, there were 100 delegate seats and 40 senate seats. Out of 140 seats, only 17 were competitive. That is not what democracy is all about. So if Ralph Northam has anything to do with it, I will stop the gerrymandering, and I will not sign a map unless it is drawn by a nonpartisan redistricting commission that I plan to move forward when I'm the next governor. You know, it's a sad time in democracy when politicians are picking their voters rather than the voters picking their representatives. That's not the way it should be. So not only will I support and move forward nonpartisan redistricting, and that's where leadership will come in. But after we do that, we're going to address campaign finance reform as well, because as you all know, in Virginia, we're in the wild, wild west. That's not good democracy either. So I also have a plan to limit contributions to $10,000 or less, and to not take contributions from big businesses and corporations, and also to stop dark money, which is a big problem right now in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So I will promise you that campaign finance reform and fair redistricting will occur in the next 4 years.
You have a rebuttal, Mr. Gillespie? You have a rebuttal?
Well, there has been one campaign that's been the beneficiary of dark money in this election, and it's not mine. I do support campaign finance reform as well. I think it is time for the Commonwealth that we ban personal use of campaign funding and campaign accounts for our legislators, and I've put that forward as part of my transparency and campaign finance reform plan. I don't think that people who are in public office right now holding one job should be able to use the money that they raised for that job to run for a different job. That makes it harder for those who aren't holding office, elected office, to be able to compete in the political process. And so I put forward what I call the FAITH Act, the Fairness, Accountability, Integrity, Transparency, and Honesty Plan for all Virginians. You can go to my website, edforvirginia.com. It's one more of my specific plans. And the first thing I would do upon taking office as the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia is enact an executive order that bans all gifts to me, to my family, to all of my political appointees. And I think that would be beneficial for us.
All right. Time for closing statements. Again, by coin toss, Mr. Gillespie, your first 60 seconds.
Great. Well, thank you, Judy. Again, thank you to the members of the VBA. And Ralph, thank you.
Yes,
good
sir,
to be
you
with
well.
You
yes,
today. Look, we had a clear discussion about which path we're going to pursue in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Are we going to pursue higher taxes and more regulations, compulsory unionism, and overturn our right to work laws, impose cap and trade carbon emission policies on the Commonwealth of Virginia, have government mandated increases, for example, more than doubling our minimum wage, and the effects that would have on job creation and opportunity here in the Commonwealth? Are we going to cut taxes 10% across the board in a responsible manner to create more than 53,000 good-paying private sector full-time jobs in the Commonwealth, a 25% increase? Look, at the end of this next governorship, it's not just about the next 4 years. It is about the next 20 to 30 years of the Commonwealth we love and the path we are going to take. We're either going to look a lot more like states to our north, slow growth, rusty, stifling economies like in New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, all of which are ahead of us in economic growth right now, but in the bottom 50% of states, or we're going to look more like the Carolinas and Florida and Georgia, states to our south that are all in the top 20 with dynamic, sunny economies. That's the direction we need to go, and I will take us there, make life better for all Virginians. Thank you all for letting me be with you here today.
Thank you, Ed. And
Lieutenant Governor,
Judy,
your
and
closing.
Thanks to the VBA. I must admit, as a doctor, when I'm in a room with this many lawyers, I tend to get a little bit anxious and nervous, but you all have been very cordial, and I certainly appreciate that. And, you know, I would just tell you that there is a contrast between Ed and myself, and I'm a public servant, and I have the vision and experience not only to ignite Virginia with innovation, but to continue building on the new Virginia economy that we've been so successful with. You know, as a pediatrician, I've, as you might imagine, held a lot of babies in my arms. And when you look into a baby's eyes, you don't see the hatred and the bigotry that we're so often seeing in our society. You see love and affection and joy and hope. So this election is about what are those babies going to grow up to be? Are they going to live in communities that are inclusive and welcoming? Are they going to have a job that they can support themselves and their families with? Are they going to have access to affordable and quality care? I look forward to leading Virginia to the next level. Pam and I want our children and families to have the same opportunities that we have. We're all in this together. We can do it the Virginia way. I would certainly support and appreciate your support and your vote on November the 7th. Thank you so much for being here today, and God bless all of you.